Morning, Chair.
How are you?
Fine, how are you?
Morning, Chair.
Hi.
Morning, Chairperson.
Morning, morning, Mam Soti.
Morning, Chair.
Good morning, and honourable members.
Morning, Joyce.
Good morning, Chair.
Morning, Honourable Gweba. I miss you guys. Yes, Benkaba Ngoti is over. Langin Boni.
Just need prayer.
Yo. That's true.
Yo.
The extension for a file laptop, yeah. Is all on your visa, it's honorable MPT, honorable Nobo. Hey, it's a Ababantabe committee until Nobo no Sheriff Bangan. Honorable Sheriff. Honorable Masiko, you rescued us, eh?
Why, Chairperson?
Because when I was looking at the screen, there were no hands. It was only Honorable Masiko. And you can imagine. He was there as
Yeah, you know, the network problem. Sure, I took time
to
log in.
Now, I want to go to the phone near me so that my hand, it's because like how thing today, you were the valise. And I'm sorry. Yeah, in fact, as long as you're not too. Anyway, without any waste of time, good morning, honorable members. I welcome you all. I declare this meeting officially open. Our today's meeting is to look at our report, our BRRR report, so that we adopt it and table it to the House. And so, yeah. Right, at least ne phone yami ngikhona ukulokhu nje ngikhona ukuthi hotspot ngayo because I don't know ukuthi whether electricity ahamba or it's because of internet problem, so it's fine. So we are going to adopt our report. Let's look at our report and see ukuthi what are the other things that we feel strong ukuthi they must be added into our report. But safe to say, last night the chairperson of CGE sent me a message that she's agreeing with us that CGE, there's no way that they will deal with big cases, major cases only, and disregard individual cases of the poor, because it's one of the responsibilities that they must assist where there's injustice, they must come in. So they are going to review their decision. There was no way, honorable members, that will leave them to take a decision that is not in favor of the poor, of the poorest. there's no way that will allow that. We have a responsibility as members of parliament that the needs of the poor people are being attended to by all government institutions, and there's no way that will let them to cut, because they can see that they have many outstanding cases. They have a backlog, but it's not our problem that they have a weak legal team. Because why do they keep a weak legal team for so long and not assess them and evaluate whether those people are doing the right thing or not? And then at the end of the day, they compromise services that must be rendered to the poor. So yesterday she sent me a message, which I welcomed, and I want to thank you, honourable members, for always supporting the work that we are doing, and for being active. Most of the time when we do our work, you know, we do our work with dedication, commitment, and passion. And so I appreciate that very much as the chair of the committee, because, you know, we are a very formidable team. And if we were not this team, we're not going to achieve most of the things that we've achieved as this portfolio committee. Thank you very much, honorable members. Let's go straight to our, any apology, Neliswa?
Good morning, Chair and members. I have received one apology from Honorable Hlengwa. She has the doctor's appointment today. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Okay, no, thank you very much, Neliswa.
Sorry, Chair.
Okay, Mama Kondi.
Okay. Mina ngizocela ngiqonde ukuthi nizoyiqeda meeting at round about 9 o'clock, ngizobe nine caucus meeting.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, no, we'll be done for sure by then.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Kashifa, you can come in. Take us through the report.
Morning, Chairperson, morning members and colleagues. As Chairperson's indicated, today we have the consideration of our budgetary review and recommendations report to the Portfolio Committee for Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. The document was sent off last night, the updated version to all members. I had sent one the evening before, and that had included everything in the BRR except for our observations and recommendations from yesterday's meeting. So that's what I included for today. So I'm just going to share my screen. Are members able to see? Is it big enough or can I enlarge?
Enlarge it for those of us who can see clearly.
Yes, please, Asiboni.
Is that better?
Increase the font again.
Again. And now?
Yeah, it's much better.
Okay. So as indicated, we are considering this report. The introduction provides members with a background to the establishment of the department. Key to note that in terms of our meeting, we were briefed by the department on the 17th of November, as well as by the Auditor General on the 24th of November, and then the NYDA and the CGE on the 2nd. Due to time constraints, we were not able to consider the Audit and Risk Committee on the 24th of November. Number two just provides us with the mandate and purpose of the department. The next section looks at the mandate of the Commission for Gender Equality, as well as the mandate of the National Youth Development Agency under 2.3. Again, the purpose of the BRR, just as a reminder to members, looking at the Money Bills Procedures and Related Matters Amendment Act, it allows Parliament to make recommendations to the Minister of Finance to amend the budget of a national department. And in so doing, in terms of Section 5.2, makes provision for the annual submission of this report tabling in the National Assembly. And how do we do that? The BRR is expected to look at the assessment of the service delivery of the department in terms of its effectiveness and efficiency, and may include recommendations for the use of resources. So technically, the BRR, as much as we look at the annual report reflecting back, it also is about making recommendations going forward. In terms of the method, just to capture again, we did look at the Auditor General's comments and findings and reports of the Audit and Risk Committee, and the annual reports for all three, the department, CGE and NYDA, as well as the key issues that emanated from our first and second quarters for 2020-2021 for both, for all three, the department, NYDA and CGE. In terms of the outline and the content of the report, we did, just to give members an overview, the report provides an analysis of the financial and programmatic performance of the department and the CGE, noting that the budget of youth and persons with disabilities program was only transferred on the 1st of April 2020. So in other words, our BRR for 1920 is looking at the department, which at the start of 2019 had programs 1-3. By the time the elections happened and the establishment of the department, programs 4 and 5 was included, but the money was only came into our vote as of the 1st of April. We then looked at analysis and commentary of 4 and 5, as well as in terms of the Q1 and Q2, as I've stated earlier. So the analysis takes cognizance of government's key priorities, as alluded to above, and how these affected women, youth, persons with disabilities, and the LGBTQIA plus persons in the country, in order to determine what progress has been made, as well as identify the gaps and challenges that have to be addressed. In terms of 6.1, we just reflect on the National Development Plan and the key priorities as outlined in the NDSF. The department maintains that it has this country gender indicator framework, which is the backbone for monitoring mechanism for that framework, which relates to gender responsive budgeting, planning, monitoring, evaluation, and auditing. And it forms the foundation of the NDP, SONA, and the Sustainable Development Goals, as well as Agenda 2063, CEDAW, and the Beijing Platform for Action, the Solemn Declaration, as well as the National Policy Framework for Women Empowerment and Gender Equality, not Equity. I'll just fix that. In implementing its programs, the department maintains that it's aligned its indicators to respond and contribute to the principles of the NDP. So the BRR also examines the extent to which the department was able to do this for the year under review, but also across the 5-year period as outlined in the strategic plan. So in other words, when we look at our BRR and analyze the annual reports for the department, the CGE and the NYDA, we're not looking at a 1 year in isolation, but we're taking into consideration what are the bigger policy imperatives for the country, as well as our international commitments. So just to remind members that MTSF, in terms of the 7 key priorities, these are outlined on the screen, and that the department has noted that it's linked all its priorities in relation to these MTSF priorities. 6.3 highlights what the President had noted in terms of the State of the Nation address, in terms of key issues. And then the department indicates with regards to at the start of 2019, our Program 2 and Program 3 would relate to what was identified in the State of the Nation address. In terms of the department's strategic priorities, which is outlined in its 2020-25 strategic plan, I've noted that earlier on, the department links its priorities to these seven MTSS priorities, as well as the NDP and SONA. So 7.1.1 outlines and the rest, each priority in relation to what the department has identified. So this is what they would like to do over the next 5 years. As I've noted, each of the priorities are identified and looking then at what the department said they intend doing. The department has also noted strategic priorities for each of its programs. Program one, it's about the strengthening of good governance, improved financial management, and effective human resources, as well as ICT. For the second program, social transformation and economic empowerment, the focus is around development and implementation of interventions to promote gender mainstreaming of socioeconomic governance, as well as empowerment and gender equality. For the third program, it's mainly around research, policy development, international relations, M&E, stakeholder engagement and advocacy. For program four, which is the national youth development, it's about coordinating, supporting, facilitating youth development and empowerment. And then lastly, for program five, which is focused on disability, it's the promotion, protection and empowerment of persons with disabilities through legislation, policy and programs, strengthening the implementation of the white paper, as well as strengthening international relations to promote the rights of persons with disabilities. So 7.2 then looks and identifies, as per the APP for 2019-20, what the department highlighted in terms of its priorities for this year under review. And they were quite a bit, coming from sanitary dignity to strategic partnerships to national gender machinery, and the establishment of the National Council on GBV, focus on gender-responsive budgeting, gender indicator framework, review reports, the National Strategic Plan for Gender-Based Violence and Femicide, monitoring the implementation of the declarations of the summit, campaigns, international commitments, mainstreaming, coordinating the development of country reports and CEDAW, a focus around the youth policy, research, and then as well as effective coordination and implementation of the white paper. With regards to the CGE, it aims to ensure that gender equality is promoted and unfair discrimination is eradicated in the policies and practices of government, other institutions, and private organizations, in line with the outcome 3, which is all people in South Africa feel safe, and outcome 11 in terms of the MTSS framework. When we look at the priorities for 1920, bearing in mind, as I've indicated, we had an initial E&E, the estimate for national expenditure in 2019, then we have the adjusted E&E. So what I've done in table 2 is to highlight to members what the department has identified in the initial E&E and then the adjusted E&E. But for both, the key emphasis for the financial year 2019-20 in terms of MTSF outcomes is around outcome 4, decent employment through inclusive growth, and outcome 14, nation building and social cohesion. So the priorities have remained largely the same except for a few changes, with an emphasis as well as on campaigns and a focus on the 365 days for no violence against women and children. Just to highlight again, I need to reiterate that this VRR could not have been done without the support of Crystal and Tasneem. They have really contributed a lot in terms of the analysis, not just during the annual report time, but also during the quarterly reports, in helping brief members that indicate what the key issues are, and also helping us track from quarter to quarter what are the pertinent matters that we should not lose sight of. So I really want to thank them. They are here if there are any additional questions for clarification. Just to highlight, in terms of the appropriated budget for 2019-20, which includes the CGE transfer, so that was a total of 254.5 million. And again, so that despite the nominal increase, so in other words, looking at 2018-19 to 2019-20, is a nominal increase of 10.7 million. But when we take inflation into consideration, the department actually had only 1.4 million less to spend than it did in the previous financial year. And then previously there was a nominal increase of 25 million, the allocation between 2017 and 18, when inflation was taken into account. Again, the key cost drivers are compensation of employees and goods and services, which is 57%, or it amounts to 90.322 million, the department's operating budget of 159.221 million. Bearing in mind that the operating budget is the money which is taken into consideration when we do not include the CGE transfer. So in terms of compensation of employees, there was an allocation of 40%, and for goods and services, correction, it is 100, was allocated. Let me just do this again. The key cost drivers for compensation of employees and goods and services, 57%, which is 90.3% of the department's operating budget, was allocated for compensation of employees, and 40%, which is the 63 million, was for goods and services. And then we look at the comparison with to the previous financial year, 2018-19. In terms of spending under goods and services, again, the main cost drivers were travel and subsistence, which is 28 million, property payments, just over 12, the external audit costs is 3, communication 3, and computer services 3 million. So these five line items amount to 81% of the goods and services budget. This figure just highlights to members the budget allocation, which includes the transfer payments between 2018-19 and 19-20. Moving along to the appropriated budget. So as indicated, when we remove the transfer payments from the allocation, the real rand change in the department's budget is 1.7 million less. Let me just remove the more than the previous financial year, 2018-19. Program 2, in fact, only had 4.8 billion DTs, where the CGE transfer allocation is removed from the budget. Then Program 3 sees the most significant increase year on year, as stated above. In terms of Table 4, it provides an overview of the financial appropriation and expenditure per program as at 31 March. The CGE's budget allocation has been excluded from the budget program 2 so as to better depict the departmental spending from this table. Here we go. So amount allocated as per the estimate of national expenditure and then looking at adjusted estimates of national expenditure, the final appropriation and any vitamins and the actual expenditure. So in essence, the administration program have an over expenditure of 3.199 million. Social transformation slightly underspent by 4,000, and program 3 had a significant under expenditure of 6.2 million. And what Crystal has noted to members in terms of vitamins, that there was money shifted from program 2 and 3 to program 1. And that amounted in total to 7.922 million. So in total, there was a vitamin of just over 9 million. For program 1, in terms of cost of employment, the reason for the over expenditure related to the ministry and loss of office payment to the former minister in terms of goods and services, it's related to the ministry as well as clearing of those unpaid advances to DIRCO for the expenditure for Series W for 2017 and 2018. In terms of the under expenditure for Program 3, this was due to vacancies because of compensation of employment, which amounted to 2.5 million, as the scaling down of stakeholder engagement, which they plan to take place to 4, that amounted to 3.1, and funds were not allocated towards replacing laptops that was not utilized, and that amounted to 497,000. So even though the department reports no over expenditure in indicates a surplus saving of 3 million for the financial year, it must still be noted that Program 1 did overspend. And we've noted all the vitamins as listed in the table above. In terms of consultants, members have always asked us to make this apparent. Within the annual report, they noted 8 projects for the financial year. That's on page 107. This amounted to just over a million. And these were the 8 projects that were the consultants were used. The department was not able to indicate that within its annual report, the estimated duration or work days of these consultants, and was unable to indicate whether consultants were historically disadvantaged individuals. In terms of irregular expenditure, so for the year under review, there was an amount of just over 2 million, which was attributed to non-compliance, the procurement supply chain management process. In addition, there was irregular expenditure from previous financial years to the amount of 37 million. That's the department's full awaits condemnation from National Treasury. So in total, the irregular expenditure on the department's books comes to just over 40 million. In the previous financial year, which is 2018-19, the department incurred an irregular expenditure of just over 4 million. In terms of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, there was an amount of 22,000 because of payment of mainframe hosting by Logos System. This is in a financial year in which it incurred an amount of 334,000. So technically the issue around the Logos, that amount wasn't used for paying that Logos System. In terms of unauthorized expenditure, there was an amount of over 3 million incurred, which is attributed to the new function of the ministry and loss of office for the minister. The department indicated that it had approached Treasury for additional funding to offset these costs, but this was not granted. And the department also reported that this expenditure is currently under determination that it will make an application to the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, the National Treasury for condonement of this unauthorized expenditure. In addition, there's also an unauthorized expenditure amounting to 29 million from previous financial years, which was also awaiting condonement from National Treasury. In the previous financial year, the department noted it had a total of 50 million unauthorized expenditure from previous years that it is awaiting authorization from. And that 27 of million was due to overspending of the vote in the financial year 2011-12, and just over 2 million was overspending within the vote for the 15-16 financial year. With respect to the current financial year 2020-21, the department still maintains that it requires adequate funding in order to function optimally. And that the current resource allocation was insufficient. So in essence, the committee concurs with the findings of the Auditor General as well as the Audit and Risk Committee in terms of its findings and recommendations. The department manages to renew its entire budget and has achieved 80% of the targets. The committee notes the work that was outsourced to consultants relevant targets and expenditure incurred despite the large cohort of staff within the programs, that most of the expenditure incurred was for compensation of employees and goods and services. So that provides us the financial overview of the department. when looking at the Commission for Gender Equality, for strategic one, we had noted as per the discussions yesterday with the CGE that in the annual report, it noted that we planned for 24 targets and achieved 25. However, in the annual performance plan, there were 12 targets listed. The strategic objective was allocated 13.3 million for the 2019-20 financial year. In terms of strategic objective two, for the CGE, again, in the annual report, the strategic objective plan to achieve 8, and within the annual report, there was also 8 targets listed. 21.7 million was allocated to that strategic objective. Strategic objective three, the annual report stated that plan to achieve 4 targets and all were achieved. However, the APP indicates that there were 5 targets. In that strategic objective, 8.7 million was allocated for the year. In terms of strategic objective 4, the annual report indicates that it's a plan to achieve 10, but 6 were achieved. However, in the annual performance plan, there's 19 targets that were listed. The strategic objective received the greatest proportion CGE's budget, which is 41.6 million. So a focus on the CGE's budget. So for the year under review, 1920, the CGE received 85.2 million, which is a 6.9 million increase from 2018-19. The greatest proportion of the CGE's budget is for compensation of employees, which comes to just over 60.1 million, amounting to 70.5%. Goods and services to 29.3%, which is 25 million. So for the year under review, it stated that most of the commission's work is carried out by internal personnel, and thus the main drivers of spending is compensation of employees with staff complement of 110. For the year under review, it augmented its income by 1.4 million through interest income, asset disposal and donations by partners. So it brought the total income for the CGE to 86.2 million. And as at the end of 31 March 2020, accumulated surplus increased to 20.4 million from the results of the current period, which is 10 million reported surplus for 1920. Surplus reported was attributed to cost containment efforts, interest income, vacancies, which accounts for the bigger contribution. The year-to-date operating expenditure was just over 70.6 million. For the current period, which 8.5 million, which is 10% of the budget, was underspending was recorded, of which 8.2 million was for cost of employment, which was attributed to vacancies for commissioners. In terms of irregular expenditure for the CGE, that was just over 1 million for the financial year 2019-20. In 2018-19, it incurred an irregular expenditure of just over 864,000. And in the previous financial year to that, it was 121,000. The CGE indicated there was no unauthorized, fruitful, wasteful expenditure for the year under review. For human resources, the CGE indicated that there were 111 funded posts with a vacancy rate of 15%, which is 17 vacancies. This is an increase from 17-18 financial year, where the vacancy rate was 10% with only 11 vacancies. And this is a cause of concern, which members have noted in discussion yesterday. So the CGE previously indicated that while it recruits highly skilled personnel, it's hard to retain them due to its limited budget, and that staff often leave due to better financial offers, which the CGE cannot compete with, and this impacts on the CGE being able to achieve targets and activities as set out in its mandate. The CGE had 94 employees during the period under review. 91 were permanent, and there were 3 temporary employees or interns. the majority of the staff are female, just about 63%, and that they indicated that there is an underrepresentation of persons with disabilities within CHE's administration. It's noted for intervention through Employment Equity Plan in the next reporting cycle. So in terms of its personnel expenditure, this amounted to just over 54 million on average, looking at the cost per employee of just over 216,000. 50% of salary cost is for high skill category, which also constitutes the majority of those employed in. Let me just click that in the core service delivery program of the CGE. 70 received performance-related rewards, which amounted to 2.8 billion in lieu of the 2018-19 period. And pending the finalization of assessments for 2019-20 performance cycle, an allocation of 3.1 million has been set. During the period under legal development, which amounted to just over 509,000 compared to the previous year, which was 454,000. A total of 20 employees left CGE during 1920. Two were due to retirement, 12 resignations, or the rest were due to the expiry of contracts. The attrition was counterbalanced by the recruitment of 18 new employees in the reporting period. In terms of the National Youth Development Agency, just looking at its program, program one, it achieved 6 out of 6 targets. For program two, it achieved 7 out of 8 targets, and then 6 targets were exceeded and 1 target was not met. For National Youth Service Program three, all 5 targets were met, 4 were exceeded. And then a program of 4, 4 to 4 targets were achieved. Looking now at the Auditor General's findings for the department, in terms of performance indicators, the Auditor General noted that the source of information or evidence for achieving planned indicators were not clearly defined. And then it indicates where this was not clearly defined. Of importance to note, the AG has previously raised the concern with the department that the performance indicators were not SMART when the ATP was reviewed. And this the AG had indicated to members in its briefing. With respect to expenditure management, the AG found that effective and appropriate steps were not taken to prevent irregular expenditure. In terms of internal control deficiencies, it noted a lack of adequate oversight by the accounting officer and senior management with regards to financial performance reporting, compliance with laws, regulations, as well as internal controls. The AG found concerns with proper record keeping as well as daily and monthly controls. Consequence management, the AG noted a lack of sufficient appropriate audit evidence to indicate that disciplinary steps were taken against officials who had incurred irregular expenditure, insufficient record keeping to support investigations into irregular expenditure. With respect to compliance, the AG found that compliance with laws and regulations would have been prevented had compliance been properly reviewed and monitored by senior management. So that summarizes the key findings for the department with respect to the CGE. The AG noted that the bid documentation for procurement of commodities designated for local content and production did not stipulate the minimum threshold for local production as required by the 2017 Preferential Procurement Relation Act, subsection 2. For internal control deficiencies for the CGE, the AG found significant internal control deficiency that resulted in the finding on compliance with legislation. Again, insufficient oversight responsibility was exercised with regards to compliance and related controls in the area of procurement, planning and contract management. And the IG also noted concerns with property record keeping as well as the review and monitoring compliance, specifically in terms of financial and performance management. CG's audit committee agreed with the findings of the IG and it noted some of the issues that were identified. The previous financial year had not been fully addressed for the various reasons. And to this end, management has made further commitments to address these shortcomings, as the IOC was satisfied that if those commitments can be implemented accordingly, that this will be properly mitigated. I think it was important also for us to note the findings from the Audit and Risk Committee for the department. These related to performance information. In terms of the planning, there were inconsistencies in relation to the strategic plan, annual performance plan, and performance indicators, and that performance indicators were not consistent with the plan was target in terms of reporting. The indicators targets reported performance, again, was not consistent, and that inconsistency of the strategic objectives in the annual performance report and the APP, and inadequate evidence supporting reported performance. Again, with ICT governance and the IT environment, inadequate ICT infrastructure and the control environment, the lack of the ICT backup system and the disaster recovery system, reporting inadequate ICT budgets, and a limitation on ICT to support the operations of the department. Unauthorized and irregular expenditure, the controls to prevent the irregular expenditure may not be working effectively due to non-adherence to supply chain management fee scripts. And that, I think most importantly, the ARC notes that it takes a long time for the audit findings to be resolved in the department. Now we shift our focus back to the department, just looking at what the department's performance has been for 1920. 40 targets, 32 achieved, 8 not achieved, a success rate of 80%. And they spent 98.1% of the budget. Program 1, 14 targets set for the year, 11 achieved, 3 not, success rate of 79%, 103% of the budget. Again, that's the over expenditure for Program 1. Program 2, success rate 71%, only 2 targets not achieved, it spent nearly all of its budget. Program 3, 92% success rate, only 1 target not achieved, it spent 84% of its budget. Again, with Program 4 and 5, as I noted to members earlier, we're only looking at the targets here. The budget has only come into effect for 1 April 2020. Program 4 achieved all its targets, and Program 5, a success rate of 67%. It only had 3 targets, only 1 was achieved, 2 not achieved. So that provides us, as I've noted, just an overview of the department's performance, which I've captured. So just highlighting Program 1, the 3 targets not achieved related to invoices that were not paid, that 95% of external audit recommendations wasn't implemented, they only achieved 72%. And not all of the DC cases were resolved within 90 days. The department indicates that the strategy to overcome areas of underperformance and that it would be that it was reorganized to create additional capacity to address performance gaps in the program. Again, this just highlights what was allocated for the program, what was spent, and the environment, which we had discussed earlier on. Again, the key cost drivers is compensation of employees for Program 1 and goods and services. For Program 2, as I've noted, there were only 2 unmet targets, and these related to the Women's Financial Inclusion Framework. They only produced 3 out of 4 reports, and that in terms of the revised IMC, Integrated Program of Action, the council was meant to be established, but the department notes that, excuse me, Chief? Okay. It was meant to be established in 2019. However, Cabinet only approved the conceptualized document and therefore deferred the establishment of the council to 2020-2021. With regards to areas of underperformance, the department indicated there was no major deviations for this program. And where targets were not met, it was due to unforeseen circumstances and capacity constraints. As such, the organizational structure has been reviewed to create the capacity needed. Of importance to DOT members, a key omission from the annual report was the target related to the National Strategic Plan. Early on, I noted that that was one of the strategic priorities identified in its APP. The target was not reported on and has subsequently appeared as a target in Q1 of 2020-2021. The key cost drivers for this program, as indicated, is compensation of employees and goods and services. The sub-program governance, transformation, justice and security incurred the highest proportion of expenditure, which amounted to just over 7 million, with a site over expenditure of 24,000. In terms of program three, it achieved 11 of 12 targets. There was only one target that was not met, which related to the number of performance monitoring review reports on women's empowerment and gender equality. There were two performance monitoring reports that were not produced as the chief director post for M&E was vacant. The department notes in its annual report that the monitoring of departments on the responsiveness to the gender responsive budgeting framework will increase as the department has now filled the position of the chief director monitoring and evaluation and other key positions in the M&E unit. The key cost drivers for this program is compensation of employees and goods and services. Sub-program stakeholder coordination and outreach incurred half of the expenditure for Program 3, which amounted to just over 18 million, with an over expenditure of just over 732,000, compared to the final appropriation of just over 16 million. For Program 4, which is the National Youth Development, as we've noted, all four targets were achieved. Program 5, which is around the rights of persons with disabilities, it only achieved one of the three targets. Two targets were not achieved, which related to the strengthening of the national disability rights machinery and the performance report on the implementation of the White Paper on Rights of Persons with Disabilities. So in terms of what it's doing to address underperformance, the department notes that in order to overcome areas of underperformance, it will be undertaking the following. The capacity of the unit will be enhanced to implement activity on disability inclusion on the financial year. And there's a second and third annual progress report on the implementation on the white paper will be combined. So that gives members a detailed indication as to performance for each program in the department. When looking at the department's human resources, as at 31 March 2020, it had 115 approved posts, of which 109 were filled, with a vacancy rate of 5.2%. So the department had a total of 10 additional to the employees to the establishment, which is an improvement as in the previous financial year, there were 23 additional. The majority of personnel in the department's employees were in the administration program, which amounts to 70 employees. 18 posts were filled in Program 2 and 21 Program 3. 10 of the employees additional to the establishment was in the administration program. We just indicate what additional to the establishment entails. The department had 42 employees in senior management, which was 10 more than in 2018-19, and this amounted to an average cost of 1.1 million. The department had a turnover rate of 11.4%, which was up from 8% in 2018-19. So for the financial year under review, 14 staff left, 5 resigned, 1 was transferred, 8 had their contracts expire, 21 employees joined the department during 1920. There were 3 disciplinary cases, of which 2 were males and 1 was female. The department indicates no employees received performance awards for the year under review. With respect to performance agreements, 24 out of 30 employees in senior management signed. Out of 28 senior management, only 14 had signed performance contracts. The reason cited was being on sick leave, invalid or unsigned agreement, dispute with regards to the contents of the performance agreement, and late submissions. For the year under review, the department has only 1 employee recording receiving a salary exceeding the level determined by job evaluation. In terms of future plans, the department indicated in the financial year 2021-2022, it will be integrating its services for women, youth and persons with disabilities by redefining its core business, its regular mandate, and the enforcement of rights of women, youth and persons with disabilities. It will subsequently, it has done this through its revised strategic plan and annual performance plan, which was submitted to the committee for consideration. So just to summarize, what are the key comments around service delivery? Improved performance from 69% in 1819 to 80% in 1920. Administration, it was able to maintain a vacancy rate of below 10%. It's currently at 5.1. It was able to ensure 2% underspending in terms of expenditure against budget allocation. Risk management was fully compliant. Internal audit systems were developed, and there was 95% availability of ICT systems. For program 2 and 3, there was approval of the sanity dignity framework. There were participation reports. They managed to coordinate the 365 program of action, hosting many dialogues. There was approval of the NGM framework by the acting DG, reports on policy matters and country reports. There was a conference on women in construction, attendance at international and regional meetings. They had also developed guidelines on the gender responsive budgeting framework, and they consulted on the country gender indicator framework. For program 4, the highlights, they produced monitoring reports. It was quality assured. They conducted oversight, looked at the draft national youth policy, as well as draft youth responsive budgeting planning, monitoring and evaluation auditing was reduced, but kept on hold pending the approval of the national youth policy. It commenced with matters pertaining to the amendment to the National Youth Development Agency Act and started the process of developing the South African Youth Development Act. It convened a National Youth Coordinating Forum. With regards to the disability, it held a national disability machinery. In terms of policy development, it had looked at its frameworks, which was updated, got engaged with on several forums, as well as there was a project with JICA in which it looked at promotion of empowerment of persons with disabilities and disability mainstreaming. It successfully signed the AU Protocol on Disability in April 2019. And there was a preliminary report on the rights of persons with albinism in South Africa as well. So that are the notable achievements. Many relate to compliance matters in administration and the development of draft framework, which have yet to be finalized and fully implemented, as these have emanated from the Department of Women in the Presidency, respect to Program 2 and 3. And of concern is the impact of the unmet targets for 1920, which totals 8, and the impact of the on the financial and programmatic performance of 2020-2021, including the unmet targets of Q1 and Q2. So what we have in Table 5, members, it's just to provide members a snapshot of the department's progress. Yes, we saw 80% at the end of 1920, Q1, they were at 59% in terms of targets achieved, and this improved to 75% in Q2. 14.9 survived members, just with, again, the finance and service delivery performance assessment for both 18, when we compare 18-19 to 19-20, which I've discussed. And then for 2021, we've noted that having engaged with the department and its APP, under Vote 20, we received an appropriation of just over 700 million. The transfer to the CGE is 89.9 million and 478 million to the NYDA. This amounts to 568.8 million, hence the department will be left with an actual operating budget of 210 million. 2020-2021. We also had the Adjustments Appropriation Bill, which there was a decrease of just over 153 million of the overall appropriation. So 107.3 million of the proposed revision was related to the budgets, CGE and the NYDA. This resulted in overall devised allocation of 645.2 million. So when removing the CGE and NYDA transfers, each Barton had an operating budget of approximately 210 million. A proposed 25.5 million will be taken from the department's operating budget of 210 million. So that leaves it with just over 180 million to meet its targets for 2020-21. The supplementary budget review notes that the restrictions on economic activity have reduced goods and services and capital spending. Funds have been reprioritized for procurement of ICT equipment to enable officials to work remotely. We also looked at Q1 and Q2 in terms of financial performance. Original appropriation was noted, 654 million, with an actual expenditure of 336.9 million for quarter two, as of 2020-21. We also highlight for each program what the allocation and expenditure was by the end of 2020-21. And as of 30 December, the department incurred irregular expenditure amounting to just over 657,000. Related to payments of security contract that was identified as irregular, which had emanated from an audit of 2017-18. In terms of HR, the vacancy rate in the department as of 30 September 2020 was 3.6%. In terms of signed performance agreements, there were only 30 in total in the department by 31 August 2020. Just to note, the department has sent the committee its responses to questions asked around why appointments took place during lockdown. So they provided members with a document which outlines who were on the panel for each of the appointments and what is in which position that appointment is, as well as the appropriate level, the level in which the person is employed.
Was that a report circulated to members?
I will check with Nelly Swat, chairperson. It was sent through, I think, yesterday afternoon or during the meeting, our meeting yesterday. Nelly Swat can just verify and let members know whether she sent it on to them.
What I observed in that report is that I'm not sure in terms of them identifying panels, that how do you have two people in a panel for a position of a chief director or a director?
Yes, Chair. I noted that too. Once I go through the observations and recommendations, I can pull out that report because I saved it for members to have a quick look at. But I think Chair's correct, and maybe that's for commentary when we look at our observations around HR, because there were two things, as Chair's indicated, the number of people in the panel, but also importantly, that under the M&E unit, I actually have a director and a deputy director for evaluation. Mm-hmm. Now, members would recall that previously we said you can't be separating monitoring from evaluation. We had discussed that matter, I think it was in V457 or V475 last year, where she actually raised the issue with the DDG at the time. But I'll bring up the document once I've done with the observations and recommendations.
Maybe Neliswa must circulate that report to members so that members can see what are we talking about.
Sure,
because when you do interviews, you establish a panel, you appoint a panel, and I've never gone to any interview whereby only two member people are panel members.
Yes, Chief. So looking then at our general observations, the committee commends the department, NYDA and CGE for tabling and reports within a specified time. We commend the department for its achievement of 80% of its targets, and only 20% was not met, and 8.1% of its budget was spent. And there was a surplus saving of just over 3 million. Whilst the department's increasing performance is to be commended, which is 68.7% in 2018-19 to 80% in 2019-20. Performance of the Rights of Persons with Disabilities program is part of its core program is concerning. The majority of the targets met in program one relate to compliance matters in terms of the development and submission of reports. Of the targets achieved in the core programs were the development of frameworks, reports, many of which were drafted and who have been either submitted, have yet to be submitted to Cabinet for final approval and endorsement. And then the committee also notes that there were a total of 8 projects which involved the use of external service provider that contributed to the achievement of targets for the department. The department remains particularly concerned with the limited number of tangible deliverables by the department that have been implemented that is not in a draft form that still requires further consultation or a Cabinet. As such, the committee questions what evidence is there to motivate this expenditure. The committee commends the department for submitting documents for report consideration, but not all of these were forthcoming in the year-end review. This compromises the ability of the committee to conduct effective oversight of the department. Notwithstanding that, the committee acknowledges the department's request for outstanding reports to be presented and discussed by the committee. And hence, we had all those briefings around key deliverables and that had taken place in 1920. The committee noted with concern that even though the department's mandate had been expanded to be inclusive of gender, youth and disability, the evidence provided hereto was not convincing and did not appear to translate to visible changes to these groups in South Africa. The committee notes the highlights of significant achievements listed in the annual report for each program, question why many of these deliverables were still in draft, as many of these have originated in the fifth administration. Many of the achievements cited related to reports and events, the committee noted was lacking, was illustrating the outcome and impact of these initiatives. The committee questioned how the department contributed to the MTSF priorities based on its achievements for the year under review. So in other words, yes, we were able to see the achievements and the deliverables. But how did that take us closer to achieving these MTSF priorities? The committee remained concerned about whether the department is optimally utilizing its budget and whether it was in fact giving effect to its mandate. The committee notes the department's concern regarding inadequate funding to give effect to its mandate. The committee concurred with the findings and recommendations of the AG and the ARC. The committee observed that the department was not effectively implementing the AG recommendations and those of the ARC, hence the repeat findings, and this was a major concern. The committee noted with concern that staff morale in the department was very low and questioned whether officials are assisted when reporting these concerns. Whistleblowers had informed Oops, sorry, let me just go back to where I was. Apologies for that. Some whistleblowers informed the committee of mismanagement, employees being poorly treated by managers, and employees experiencing being abused, causing mental health concerns. The impact of low staff morale and productivity within the department was concerning for the committee. Those were general observations. Specifically, observations I've highlighted under subheadings, so it's easier to contain and follow. Policy imperatives. Committee questioned how the department will provide strategic leadership to other committee-governed departments when many of its policies were still in draft. The committee remained concerned about how the department would implement their mission and vision in the absence of finalized policies for women, youth, and persons disabilities. The committee was concerned about the cost incurred for compensation of employees, especially at senior management levels, on highly skilled professionals. But despite these, human resources, department's monitoring and evaluation tool still in a draft form. The committee remained concerned about how it was implementing gender mainstreaming as well as youth and disability mainstreaming. The lack of finalized policies puts into question how the department was in monitoring and evaluating whether gender, youth and disability mainstreaming was given effect to within government. In terms of governance and operational issues, regards to the AG findings, the committee noted with concern the repeat findings by the AG and the repeated calls by the committee itself to the department to address particular matters, which appeared not to be taken seriously, as not all of these recommendations were implemented by the end of the financial year. The committee noted with concern the AG and ARC findings, which relates to the lack of accountability and consequent management, which attributed to the leadership within the department. However, the latter was not identified as problematic by the AG and ARC. In other words, the AG and the ARC didn't highlight leadership as an issue or as an area of concern. The committee remains concerned about the repeat findings by both the AG and the ARC regarding the lack of adequate oversight of the county officer and senior management. This is also a repeat finding from the fifth administration. With regards to the fifth administration and repeat findings, it's literally within each of its annual reports in that first administration. In terms of the Audit and Risk Committee, the committee acknowledges the findings and recommendations of the ARC. The committee notes with concern the ARC would be supporting the department and the NYDA simultaneously. In terms of audit outcomes, the committee noted with concern the audit outcomes for 2019 that were not implemented. So out of 59, there was only 43, hence only 72% were clearly resolved. This, despite the department having reported on progress of its audit action plan at every quarter in 2019-20. This pointed to a serious lack of consequent management. The committee observed that the department did not have a designated labor relations officer and relied on officials from other departments and their availability. However, the department prioritized labor relations post for 2021. The committee noted its discontent with the lack of a labor relations officer and its impact on resolving audit outcomes. The ARC was concerned with the pace in which the department moves to resolve these audit findings. Compliance. The committee noted its concern the repeat finding of non-compliance and laws and prescripts. In terms of investigations, the committee has noted the concerns of slow progress of investigations as reported on by the AG and the ARC. In terms of internal audit, the department is to be commended for producing one rolling three-year strategic audit plan and the annual internal plan for 2018-19, which was approved at the ARC, as well as five internal audit reports against the annual internal audit coverage plan. However, in terms of internal controls, yes, the department is to be commended for having developed and implemented the internal audit system. However, the AG notes significant internal control deficiencies, which is concerning. Firstly, inadequate oversight has been exercised by the accounting officer. regards to financial and performance reporting, compliance with laws and regulations, as well as related internal controls. Secondly, non-compliance with laws and regulations have been prevented as compliance been properly reviewed and monitored by senior management. This is concerning as these are repeat findings in the department, and the committee has highlighted this in the 2019 BRR. According to the 2019-20 annual report, the ORC noted improvement of internal control systems. However, the committee is concerned about the breakdown of key controls, as well as the inability of management to adequately strengthen the internal control systems, supply chain, and performance information management. Management indicated some internal control deficiencies that emanated from inadequate human and financial resources. Management has assured the Audit and Risk Committee that the control deficiencies will be addressed through detailed action plans. This is concerning as the department has reported in every quarterly report, but has not raised this with such seriousness as articulated by the Audit and Risk Committee. In terms of risk management, the committee commends the department with submission of the risk reports, ensuring that risk management was functionally compliant with legal requirements. The committee noted the ARC considers the risk function to be under-resourced in order to function optimally to maximize its coverage of the risk exposures facing the department given its current human resources. However, the main concern of the committee is related to what issues were that are contained in the report which have not been addressed. And the repeat findings noted by the AG and ARC. Consequence management. The committee noted a concern the lack of consequence management, which can be attributed to ineffective leadership. The committee observed that even though the department has not experienced a change in leadership with regards to the executive authority, the senior management position, including that of the accounting officer, was full towards the end of 2019-20. In the position of the acting DG was done on a rotational basis for a significant part of 1920. Notwithstanding that, the vacant positions for senior management positions in the core programs have also contributed to problems for programs to be led effectively. Moreover, the AG repeat findings around the lack of consequence management, irregular expenditure, and internal control deficiencies due to inadequate oversight and non-compliance with regulations, even though not stated by the AG of IRC, does bring into question the effectiveness of the leadership of the department. When we look at the observations around the administration program for HR, the issue around top heavy structure of the department versus the lack of capacity. So the committee observed that of the 109 posts, 42 officials were in senior management, added to another 42 that fell within the highly skilled official category. Thus, 84 officials are meant to have the requisite skills to function at a high level. And as such, the expectation would be that the department should be able to yield the necessary deliverables in order to give effect to its mandate and achieve the goals it set out. The committee noted with concern the department's repeated indication that it lacked required capacity in terms of HR, yet at the point of appointing the highly skilled staff and senior managers, this was never an issue. Then, this was a disjuncture between claiming lack of capacity, but employing what the department deemed competent staff and skilled officials. This is important to serious problems with the department's recruitment process. Ms. Maluleke had raised this issue specifically with the department when they presented on its annual report. In terms of the use of consultants, the committee noted that the department continued to procure the use of consultants during the year. We highlighted the 8 projects, which was concerning given the request from Treasury to curtail costs in terms of consultancy. And the committee consistently discouraged the department from using external service providers, given its limited budget, and the use of consultants still remained a concern to the committee, given the large number of highly skilled professionals and senior managers in the department, which we noted previously. In terms of vacancies, the department is to be commended for maintaining that vacancy rate, which we said was 5.1%. Notwithstanding that, the committee was dissatisfied the lack of capacity in Program 4, which is the right of persons with disabilities, as it would appear that filling of these vacancies was not prioritized during 1920. Furthermore, in light of the filling of vacancies reported on during lockdown, the controversy in relation to the Chief Director advocacy mainstream the committee expresses concern in this regard. In terms of DC cases, the committee noted concern that there was one VC case outstanding from 1920, but more importantly, there appeared to be outstanding DC cases that were not finalized from 2012-13 financial year. The DC cases for the year under review are directly related to repeat findings both by the AG, the ARC, which related to lack of consequence management for record-keeping, internal control deficiencies, lack of oversight and non-compliance decreases, which is concerning. In terms of financial performance, it's to be commended the department for maintaining a less than 2% underspending. However, there's a lack of underspending within the four programs is concerning, particularly for Program 4. This is a continued trend into Q1 and Q2. Which is disconcerting for the as department still maintained it lacked the requisite funding and resources to fully give effect to its mandate. So on the one end, they underspending, but on the other end, they indicating they lack resources. So the committee was concerned about unauthorized expenditure, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and irregular expenditure incurred during 1920. And noted its dissatisfaction of the department's ability and response to addressing the concerns. The audit in this committee acknowledges that the department reduced the irregular expenditure by 40% when compared to 4 million irregular expenditure in 2018-19. However, the ARC still regards the irregular expenditure as still high. This is a repeat finding and is concerning for the committee. The committee noted with concern that the delayed payments which related to the CSW in terms of the 62nd and 63rd session for 2017-18. In terms of vitamins, the committee observed vitamins from the core programs, the administration program, which then still overspent. Whilst the vitamins were allowed, the shifting of funds away from the core programs is concerning. In terms of supply chain management, the committee noted concern the number of invoices paid outside the 30-day period. The target was not met. So out of that, a total of over 8,008 invoices, it only managed to achieve 99.03% within 30 days. The committee noted the late payment, which was due to human resource capacity challenges, as officials were on study leave during quarter one of the financial year. However, this points to poor planning on the side of the department and could have been avoided. The committee has been informed of the department at Q2 briefing that the position director supply chain management will be in Q3. So this is welcomed. The committee remains concerned about the perpetual transgressions that occur, the lack of effective consequence management implemented that would deter officials from offending in this regard. In terms of ICT, yes, the committee commends the department for the 95% availability of ICT systems and the development of reports. However, the major ICT issues emanating from 1890 have not been entirely resolved, which is concerning as the committee had continuously requested progress updates from the department during quarterly report briefings, at which the committee was reassured that the matters were being addressed. With respect to ICT governance and the IT environment, the IRC notes the following. In terms of inadequate ICT infrastructure in the control environment, again, lack of ICT backup system, reporting inadequate ICT budget places a limitation on ICT to support the operations of the department. This is concerning, hence this highlights that the production of services reports in and by itself as a target does not address the grave ICT concerns. The committee maintains that it is what is contained in those reports and what is done about it that is important. The committee noted with concern that tools of trade such as laptops were not procured as the budget was not utilized. Moving then on to the core programs, this is an overview for the department. unmet targets. The committee was concerned about the impact of the 8 unmet targets in 1920 and then the subsequent unmet targets on Q1 and Q2 and what impact that would have, obviously, for the rest of the financial year, Q3 and 4, 2021. For performance outcomes, the committee was concerned that the department was not placing more emphasis on the outcomes and impact of the initiatives undertaken. In terms of policy and law reform, the committee noted concern in the absence of finalized policies for gender, youth, and disability mainstreaming cannot be expedited in government, private sector, and civil society at large. The committee notes the pending legislation the department is currently working on that pertains to both to all three, women, youth, and persons with disabilities. Draft frameworks. The committee notes of concern the number of outstanding policies still in draft form and requiring cabinet approval in the core programs as well as the length of time it takes to finalize. In terms of M&E and the impact on government policies and programs, the committee notes of concern that in the absence of an M&E framework that are fully implemented, the department would be failing on its mandate. In terms of Program 2 and the Sanitary Dignity Program, the department is to be commended for achieving the two targets related to the SDB, which is the framework that was submitted to Cabinet for consideration and the approval of the report that outlined progress on the national rollout, which is in line with the revised Sanitary Dignity Implementation Framework. The committee, having been briefed by the department in Q2, was concerned about the effectiveness and rollout of the program in provinces, given the findings and outcomes contained in the report. The committee maintained that it was not merely the production of the reports in relation to sanitary dignity, but the impact this program has made. The committee was concerned of the length of time it takes to finalize the M&E framework, as it is scheduled to be finalized November 2020. However, this was in contrast to the deliverable noted in the annual report in which it said framework was finalized. Another concern noted by the committee based on the department's briefing on the Sanitary Dignity Program at the end of Q4 was that only 6 of the 9 provinces had established these committees, the Provincial Sanitary Dignity Committees. This was problematic given that these governance structures were meant to monitor the framework. The committee noted the concern the corruption in KZN as it pointed to the lack of timely monitoring and evaluation and enforcement of the framework and guidelines. The disparate funding modalities in the implementation of the SDB in provinces, despite the framework and guidelines, was another cause of concern, and thus the committee questioned how many young girls and women can actually benefit not only in 1920, but as well as in 2020-21. In terms of the Women's Financial Inclusion Framework, the committee noted was concerned that the target was not met, even though the department highlights this through capacity building across provinces as an achievement. The annual target was not met, as only 3 of the 4 reports were approved. The committee observed that the capacity building workshops which were held in Gauteng and Mpumalanga actually related to the Sanitary Dignity Program to welcome the report. The committee reiterated the importance of the inclusion of youth, particularly young women and persons with disabilities, throughout the economic value chain, which includes training opportunities at the capacity building workshop implemented by the department. In terms of the 365-day program of action, in terms of campaigns, the department's commend for achieving the target, having coordinated several initiatives to 365-day program of action. The committee reiterates the importance of the impact and outcomes yielded from these initiatives, following up matters that emanated at these events by participants, and how the sustainability of this program of action is ensured in the medium to long term. In terms of the NGM, it was approved for the Acting Director General's submission to Cabinet. It is to be commended. However, it's concerning that it took the department the entire financial year to complete the framework, then approved for the ADG, after which it still needed to be sent to Cabinet. Whilst the development of a framework is welcomed, the duration to complete such a task and costing is the current financial year by Q2, The department indicates that this target was still not met. It was pending further consultations, and the target will be finalized in Q3. The committee remains concerned that in the absence of this NGM framework, how the department then convenes an NGM plenary. In terms of the National Strategic Plan, as noted previously to members, the committee notes that the annual report makes no reference to progress in relation to the target pertaining to the National Strategic Plan. This, despite it being identified as a priority in the revised APP and indicated earlier on to produce a National Strategic Plan on gender-based violence and femicide. This is concerning. The committee was briefed on the 3rd of September by the department and informed that the NSP had subsequently been finalized and was approved by the president during lockdown. The official handover of the NSP was televised. The committee, having engaged with the department on this policy, was particularly concerned by the scope and the veracity of the policy, given that the costing was still not complete at the time of the briefing, bringing into question how the plan will be implemented with no clear indication of the cost incurred and resources required. With regards to C members, I included this because I thought it's something for discussion and it's important to note that there were allegations that were revealed on a televised expose that related to the involvement of SABCOA and the 5 BMWs that were donated by the German Chancellor during 1920. So if you recall, the Minister did brief the committee on the issue around SABCOA and the 5 BMWs, but I thought, given that it falls within the 1920 financial year, it needs to be noted. The committee noted its concerns with regards to the establishment of a GBV fund, and it was unclear how exactly such a fund would be managed, and on what basis would be the funds would be dispersed. To this end, it was also unclear to the committee what the criteria and process would be for non-governmental organizations to apply and what would ensure the election outcome. In terms of the council, the committee noted with concern that the target was not achieved and the establishment was deferred to 2021. The committee raised concerns about the process for establishing the council, its role and its purpose. The committee remained concerned about the structure of the proposed council. The committee was not satisfied with the explanation provided by the department regarding the form, function, the board of trustees, the secretariat, and other structures of in-government dealing with GBVF. The committee noted its discontent with the lines of accountability of the council and related structures between the interministerial committee and the committee. The committee noted it was unclear who exactly should be held to account for the implementation of the ASP at a national, provincial, and local level. And the committee observed that the statute requirements for council is another outstanding matter. And according to the president's recent address to the nation regarding COVID-19 response, he indicated a process that in this regard in terms of legislation pertaining to the council. For program 3, the monitoring review reports on women's empowerment, the committee noted concern that the target related to two performance monitoring review reports on women's empowerment and gender equality reviews was not achieved. Instead, the reports were produced. However, the department could only review annual performance plans and strategic plans of two provinces, namely Limpopo and Free to assess the responsiveness of the GRB framework. The review of and strategic review of strategic plans for housing could not be conducted due to human resource capacity. The chief director, M&E post was vacant and this affected planned performance. By the absence of a chief director for M&E, the department has 42 highly skilled staff in its employ. Given the budget constraints and capacity constraints, department need to plan more effectively for the rest of the MTSF period to look at how you attain targets for the current workforce, 42 highly skilled professionals and 42 senior managers. In terms of events, campaigns and mobilization, Whilst the department is to be commended for hosting events, campaigns, and various consultation forums, and which are important platforms for engagement, the impact is not clear. The committee maintains reflecting only on the number of attendees as beneficiaries is insufficient. Missing the outcomes and subsequent impacts of such initiatives is not apparent to the committee based on what the department has reported on. This despite numerous requests by the committee to the department to do this. In terms of agenda policy priorities, which is another target, the department is to be commended for achieving this. This report was submitted to the committee and subsequently presented. Having been briefed on the report, overall it was not entirely clear what the role of the department is in terms of giving effect to the gender priorities identified, what specific timeframes are and how these priorities will be monitored and evaluated, as well as what the interrelationship is between the gender responsive budgeting, the country gender indicator framework, as well as all the other frameworks within and policies within the department. In terms of the country gender indicator framework, the department is to be commended for achieving the target, which is the one consultation report on the country gender indicator framework. Even though the annual report indicates this is a new indicator, the work pertains to the country gender indicator is not new. Just need to remove that. Country gender indicator is not listed on the department's website, nor with the consultation report. These are important deliverables which should be made widely accessible and be available. The committee was briefed by the department on the framework. The concerns noted was that the country indicator framework is focused on gender. The checklist, while providing some guidelines, would remain broad, open-ended, and lack specificity. There was no specific guidance as to govern department entity to assist them with knowing what indicators and targets are key and where these have been formulated correctly, how the data should be collected, how often, and how the monitoring and evaluation took place. Nor is there specific guidance to indicate what is required for targeted gender programs within departments and entities, nor is there specific guidance to indicate what is required for allocating resources that is gender responsive. It's also unclear at what level responsibility that this will be assigned to, whether it's accounting officer, chief financial officer, DDG, and so forth. There's no guidance to indicate what is required for ensuring that technical indicator descriptors are formulated correctly. The committee maintains the country gender indicator framework would need to be strengthened in order to be effective. In looking at the gender responsive framework, the department is to be commended for achieving the target. It has noted, however, several areas of concern, key of which was the status of framework and guidelines. What we note here is, again, the interrelation of this gender responsive framework and in relation to all the other frameworks and policies in the department. Several of these policies within the department is in the process of being finalized and updated. The committee was concerned with the lack of interlinkages between these policies. In terms of the guidelines, dated February 2020, which was welcomed by the committee at the briefing, however, the guidelines again noted appear to be broad in some respects and offering little guidance on what should be done by who and when. The checklist in the guidelines document is helpful, firstly, but there are areas, each of the four phases that require clarity, and the committee questioned the effectiveness of the guidelines for framework. In terms of the disability program, the department is to be commended for achieving the target tool for national strategic frameworks. These targets have emanated from the previous financial year. These frameworks are still to be consulted on by affected sectors. The committee was concerned that this program is performing poorly with the establishment of the department. It's also concerned by the lack of capacity and the impact on the program to deliver on it. The committee questioned the effectiveness of the M&E function of the program, given the challenges identified with persons with disabilities, having to access wheelchairs at public health facilities and disability grants at the post office. The committee noted they have not received any policy frameworks related to people's disabilities from the department, despite being requested to do so. These were actually submitted on the day the department presented its annual report. Again, the committee reiterates the importance of finalizing draft frameworks and introducing a disability bill. The draft discussion paper, which was submitted on the day of the annual report, dated September 2020, is actually of a poor quality and it has no page numbers. It mainly contains a list of definitions and chapters. It outlines objects and purpose of the proposed act, in addition to a cut and paste of the general principle of the UNCRPD. In terms of the youth development program, it's to be commended for achieving all targets. Notwithstanding the achievements of the committee, noted the concern that the national youth policy, even though presented to cabinet, that it to be finalized as technical inputs were made and the committee's comments also taken into consideration. The committee articulated concerns about the draft national youth policy. The committee noted concern the need for role clarity between the branch, NYDA, and the Presidential Working Group on Youth. We await the tabling of the NYDA Amendment Bill. And we also, the committee also noted with concern the repeated reference to the use of the word oversight in describing the role and function of this program in relation to NYDA. This, despite numerous occasions in which the committee had brought this to the attention of the department. In terms of CGE matters and observations, the CGE was commended for achieving 42 out of 46 targets, and only 4 targets were not achieved. However, the discrepancies between the number of targets reported on in the annual report versus that which appeared in the annual plan were significantly different and warranted serious attention. To this end, the committee noted a concern whether the targets achieved in the annual report were then an accurate reflection of performance for the year under review. The committee noted with concern strategic objective 4 was the worst performing for the year under review, yet it received the greatest proportion of the CGE's budget, thus bringing to question whether there was value for money in this program, and it concurs with the findings of the recommendations of the AG. In terms of governance, the committee noted its discontent with the CGE's governance structure, plenary of commissioners in particular, and senior management for having approved such an annual report these major anomalies. To this end, the committee questions CGE's internal processes for approving reports. The committee observes the CGE's audit committee agreed with the findings of the auditor general that some issues that were identified by the AG in the previous financial year were not fully addressed for various reasons, as management stated, but management has committed to address the shortcomings, as the audit committee was satisfied that if these were implemented accordingly, the risk could be properly mitigated. The committee also notes the auditor committee was satisfied, audit committee was satisified with the key control over financial performance management reporting during 1920, with the exception of reported deficiencies and deviations. In terms of CGE's finances, the committee commended the CGE for operating within its budget given the scope of its mandate. The committee urged the commission to guard against irregular expenditure and to swiftly address irregularities and complete investigations. The committee notes that the impact of the adjustment budget on the CGE in terms of the $10.3 million that was surrendered to National Treasury, but also the $6.8 million that was subsequently returned to the CGE. In terms of HR, the committee notes concern the unit, legal unit lacked the requisite capacity and the position of the parliamentary liaison officer was not prioritized to be filled in the year under review. The committee notes concern the CGE's punitive approach to employee sick leave and reiterated the rights of employees in this regard. In terms of legal services, the committee noted the concern the CGE's standing as a legal practice has been withdrawn and that this in turn has impacted on its case management. The committee raises concerns with the CGE that no submission was made at the time of the Legal Services Amendment Bill to Parliament in 2017 to motivate why the CGE should remain as a legal entity in order to perform certain acts or render a certain service as a practicing legal practitioners. In terms of case management for the CGE, the committee commends the CGE for achieving the target. However, major concerns noted by the committee was the decrease in the number of cases. Yes, please.
Just go back to that one where you're talking about why the CGE, the one, the matter that we discussed at length.
The legal services?
Yes.
So, with this instance, the committee noted the concern regarding the CGE's standing as a legal practice has been withdrawn and that this in turn has impacted on its case management. So what was explained to the committee was that there was an advocate who went to court. I thought I checked in terms of the legal services practice bill. That was actually approved by the NA and the NCOP in October, November and December of 2017. So that bill was dealt with not just this year or last year, it was actually dealt with in 2017. So it's concerning that it's only been brought to the attention of the committee this year by the CGE. In terms of case management, as I've noted, there was a decrease in the number of cases opened, closed, pending and rolled over to the next financial year. So this is a trend for the last 3 years, not just for the 1920 financial year. The committee expresses dissatisfaction with the CGE's decision to focus on what it deemed major cases that would draw greater attention and make more impact. The committee reiterated the value and importance of the CGE in rendering a service to the majority of persons in the country who are poor, many of whom are women and experience discrimination. In terms of reports, the committee acknowledged the importance of the investigations undertaken and the research reports produced by the CGE, but placed the importance on the findings being addressed and recommendations implemented. In terms of treaty compliance, the committee remained concerned about the CGE's ongoing monitoring and evaluation of internal and regional treaties and commitments, as this was not apparent. And in the absence of an M&E framework and tool, this was disconcerting. In terms of women incarceration, the committee noticed concern the lack of follow-up pertaining to work done on women incarcerated in correctional services centres in South Africa, which was done in 2018-19, but this was not reflected in the annual report of 1920.
I'm sure, I'm going to cut you.
Yes.
Because we have a caucus that is starting at 10, and we'll then continue at 1.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think even other parties, they have a caucus. So we'll have to finalize our report at 1.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And maybe finalize this one, and then we know that when we come back, we start from... Yes.
The recommendations.
Yeah.
Okay. Again, just with the AG, it indicates the issues of the usefulness and reliability of reported information. However, the committee noted that there were numerous discrepancies in relation to strategic objectives, which is inward looking, and Crystal highlighted in her report, the annual report only reflects 10, but the APP actually has 19. With regards to the M&E framework and tool, I think the key issue here is that my committee is concerned that this is still not done. And we had a briefing about this in Q2. Yesterday, the CGE noted that there's a relationship with DPME in this regard. But the committee has reiterated use existing skills within the department. Just in summary, the NYDA was straightforward, 96% achievement. There needs to be a focus on female and entrepreneurs and youth with disabilities. We looked at the National Skills Fund and noted that that wasn't followed through in 1920 and the importance of ongoing monitoring of grants to entrepreneurs and to ensure support to youth in this regard for sustainability in the long term. Thank you, Chair. So I'll focus on the recommendations when we return.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Honourable Members, because I was looking at our time that we are running out of time and with our caucus meeting is starting at 10. So we'll then request members to log in again at 1 so that we can finalize our report. I think we're left with few items we need to deliberate on the recommendations that you want to put forward as the portfolio committee. Thank you very much. Let's attend. Let me attend.
Thank you, Chair.